Dear friends, I am so pleased to find ourselves back today. So, let's resume and keep on what we saw last time when we started to identify the mark of the beast. Let us recall what we said in the second part of chapter 13 about this famous beast rising from the earth. The second beast leads a global population to a general worship of the first beast. Then he seduces the inhabitants of the earth first with great signs. Jesus warned us about this, even to the point that it causes a false reign of spirit. He will even ask the inhabitants of the earth to make an image to the beast. He does not impose them. He just asks them to make an image. And not content with asking the inhabitants of the earth to make an image, he will animate the image. How will he manage afterwards? He will see to it that the image of the beast which he animates enact a death decree. How will he go about it? First, he will require that all inhabitants of the earth receive a mark. The mark of the beast, so that no one can buy or sell. And this is, of course, the first step before further restrictions. But now we need to identify this mark of the beast. What is it? For this, we have several elements. The first feature is that this mark can be applied on the hand or on the forehead. When we look for texts that speak of the hand or the forehead, we come across a few, not many, but a few, that speak of God's requirement. First of all, we have regulations about Easter, and we have also special instructions regarding the Ten Commandments. About this practice of mark on the hand or on the forehead, in fact, doing something recalled, revived a memory. For example, eating the Passover with bitter herbs recalled the memory of the Exodus from Egypt. Once we have established the link between the hand and the forehead, we understood that it is all about a prescription or a law. We thus concluded that it is a law that the beast will impose to the whole world. The second element allowing us to come closer to identifying this mark is found in the book of Prophet Daniel. We learn here that a power, which I do not have time to determine now, would oppress God's people in the end. And while it oppresses God's people during this period, in chapter 7, verses 24 and 25, it would change or would hope to change times and law. And we understand that it is through a change of law that it will succeed in persecuting God's people. Consequently, we come to the conclusion that the mark of the beast is a law of God that has been changed, diverted, to make it its own law. That's where we ended on our previous presentation. So let's resume where we left our study. It turns out that God's law has been changed. It has been amended in two places. First, the second commandment. The second commandment enjoined not to make any graven image, and especially not to bow down to these graven images, that is to say before statues, purely and simply deleted. Of course, the feudal system of the Middle Ages, having multiplied statues and having multiplied genuflections before these statues, the second commandment could not be kept any longer. So to maintain the number of the commandments to 10, the last commandment has been divided into two, so that in the end, we have two commands regarding covetousness. Then, another amendment has been made in the fourth commandment. This change seems insensitive, but it moves the day of rest from the seventh day, Sabbath, to the first day of the week, Sunday. This means that instead of observing the Sabbath, this system since Constantine has imposed the observation of the first day of the week, Sunday, as a day of rest. Since then, most Christians observe Sunday as a day of rest. Then you may ask, is that so important? Yes, indeed, it is important, and we'll see why. This is especially important because God has made this Sabbath, this day of rest, Saturday, the seventh day, a sign. And the sign concept ties up with the mark concept. It is a visible sign as a seal. So, let's look at these texts that talk about this visible sign, which is the observation of the Sabbath rest. Well, we find the first one in the book of Exodus, chapter 31, verse 13. Exodus 31, 13. Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generation, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. A second text tells us also the same thing. We find it in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 20, verse 12. Ezekiel 20, 12. Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, that they might know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them. And in verse 20, we have almost the same idea, but with a small nuance. Ezekiel 20, 20. Hallow my Sabbath, that there will be a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. So, here we have three texts that clearly tell us that the Sabbath is a sign. But there must be a link between the signifier and the signified. Of what is the Sabbath a sign? These texts tell us that this is a sign, not that we be good servants of God, not at all, but a sign stating that it is God who makes us holy. So, let's try to understand what this could mean. We have an example of this link that should exist between the signifier and the signified through a text I invite you to read now in the Epistle to the Romans, chapter 4, verse 11. Romans 4:11. And he, that is Abraham, received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had while still uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all those who believe, though they are uncircumcised, that righteousness might be imputed to them also. Abraham received the sign of circumcision. This was the sign that he received, righteousness on behalf of God. But what is the link between the two? That sign of circumcision revived a special memory, the memory of the covenant God made with Abraham. In chapter 15 of Genesis, we find the following story. Abraham cut a couple of animals in two and placed each piece opposite the other. All day he has been chasing away birds of prey that came down to the, on the carcasses. Then evening came, and he fell into a deep sleep, and God, in the form of fire, passed between these animals. That is, God and Abraham went through the same path. But what is the link with the fact of cutting? Probably, the idea of cutting the animals referred to the Hebrew expression to cut a covenant, not to make a covenant. That was probably also the idea of giving up a part of oneself, giving up perhaps a little of this secret garden of ours, the guilty pleasures we try to keep, the old man, as the Apostle Paul states it. It was also a sign exposing the nakedness of his soul before God. You see that there is a meaning link between the signifier and the signified, between gesture that is made and what it represents in the heart and in the mind. So with the Sabbath. Does keeping the Sabbath make sense? Does the observance of Sunday make sense? Yes, it does. Observing the Sabbath means simply to rest. On that day, God does not ask us to do something. He asks us not to do the work we usually do, the work we can do on the other days of the week. Besides, the commandment itself says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. What does this have to do with our spiritual life? This means that to sanctify myself, since it is the sign that the Lord is the one who sanctifies me, I do not rely upon myself. I rely upon God's work. If I observe Saturday as the day of rest, it is not a sign of blind obedience. It is because I accept the idea that I cannot sanctify myself and that I rely on God's work to sanctify me. In short, I do not choose that day. I take it as it is given to me. On the other hand, if I choose another day, then this only choice is already a deed. And this deed means that I am building my relationship with God on a personal choice, which is different from the choice God has made. This means that I intend to build my sanctification, and beyond, I pretend to build the city of God on earth. I intend to build human happiness. I pretend to build his spiritual life on this basis. And if someone comes to hinder me in this scheme, I get rid of him, and thus I become persecutor. It is likely that most people do not apply this meaning to Sabbath observance or Sunday observance.
Derrière l'observation du sabbat ou l'observation du dimanche.
It is likely that most people do what their parents did. Nevertheless, it is extremely important to maintain this meaning. The rest God offers us is not a simple rest that consists of doing nothing. He does not tell me not to do anything that day, but to not do what I usually used to do. It's like a fiancé telling his fiancé, "Well, devote that day to me." Though the bride is compelled to stop her activities, yet she is very happy, since she will meet her loved one on that day. Then she asks, "But what should I do?" The bridegroom says, "Oh, no, no, I don't impose anything. Surprise me, please me," which means on that day I can do whatever I want to do for God, praising Him, thinking, meditating, having a break on my daily path of work and rest on Him. During the wilderness period, manna did not even fall on that day. Food didn't come down from heaven. But on Fridays, it happened to fall twice as much as usual, so that there was food enough for 2 days. Therefore, man can rely on God both for his everyday life as well as for his spiritual life. So moving in the direction, we understand that people do not even have the faintest idea that they are following a party or another. It does not even come to their mind that by observing Sunday, they are paying allegiance to an authority which is none other than this church, this feudal system of the Middle Ages, which imposed Sunday rest. Because it is a political authority that indicates it in the person of Constantine. But it is a political figure in the person of the Church who relayed it. You see, as we come up to this point, we need to stop and ponder for a while. We must know what to do about this practice we have of observing a day of rest. But it's also true for all other practices. What does this practice really mean to me? What does this practice really mean to us? Is what we do meaningful? Is it just simple tradition? Is it just a habit? Or does it make sense? I invite you to reflect on everything you do. Everything you do may be without thinking, but which ultimately is so meaningful. What meaning shall we give to our practices, and especially our religious practices? Do we realize that what we do, tell upon our minds, brings back memories, represents a membership? For example, the act of observing the Sabbath is a reminder of creation. Because God rested on the seventh day, not that He needed to, but He wanted to show us what He expects from us. And that day He set apart. And if He set it apart, shall I despise it? The Sabbath is also a reminder of Exodus from Egypt. That is the Exodus from my own sin. The Exodus from slavery. So it makes sense. Do I reflect on this meaning? Does this have any value for me? It is important that everyone acts in full knowledge of the situation. You see, we can do things without realizing it. Then it's just a mark on the hand. But if this practice awakens in us memories corresponding to a deeper reality, then the mark is on the front. What God wants for us is that we be marked on the forehead. He has no interest in a mark on the hand. If we do things simply by habit, as a daily routine, or traditionally, then it is meaningless. The seal of God is applied on the forehead. On the other hand, the mark of the beast is applied on the forehead or on the hand. The beast is satisfied with a worship, a practice that is a routine, that is a pure form of allegiance. But that's not the case with God. So, which side do we stand on? What do we make of this practice? Does it make sense? Because you see, if it does not make sense, thus, we believe it is neutral. If it does not make sense, then the mark is on the hand. So, it belongs to the beast system, which is merely ritual. Whatever we do does make sense. If having this mark on the hand does not mean anything, then it might be the other way around, because the mind, the forehead, is marked. What do we do with that thought? As for me, I want only one thing. If I know that this Sabbath is given to me by Jesus, I do not want anything else but His mark. May God help us to understand it.